Ocean Calls.
Hello and welcome to Ocean Calls, the podcast in which we debate with the experts, break down the science, share fascinating ocean facts and inspiring marine adventures. I'm your host, Euronews science reporter Jeremy Wilkes, and in this episode, we'll be talking about science fiction coming true.
New 2-liter plastic bottle.
Pounds off your shopping load. And they're strong enough to protect against some of life's hard knocks.
It's tough and light.
What you're hearing are commercials for reusable plastic bottles in the 1970s. Affordable, durable and versatile, single-use plastics came into our lives in the mid-20th century, a symbol of a booming consumer society. And now, a symbol of environmental pollution of our planet. Imagine if back then, the company making the throwaway plastics, or even the people buying them, had been able to click on an app and see the impact they would have on our environment. Animals choking on plastics, pellets scattered over our beaches, the oceans littered with microscopic man-made waste. Would that information have changed the world? Maybe. And this year, that dream may become a reality. Sort of.
Oceans cover over 70% of our planet, sustaining vast and complex marine ecosystems and supporting billions of people. We need to know how our oceans are changing to protect and preserve them for future generations.
What you're hearing is the advert for the Digital Twin of the Ocean, a European Union initiative to create an artificial intelligence-fueled representation of the seas. It should be accessible to the public later in 2024. The main goal of the Digital Twin of the Ocean is to help the end users, policymakers, businesses and society make science-based decisions and simulate what-if scenarios through new visualization tools. What if the Netherlands built more offshore wind farms in the North Sea? What if Spain restricted tourism in parts of the Mediterranean? What if I wanted to build a house on the River Rhone? Would it be affected by sea level rise in the future? Joanna Staniva, a physicist at the Helmholtz-Zentrum Heron Research Centre in Germany, explains the concept.
Think of the artificial intelligence as a tool that helps us to predict and understand what is going on in the ocean. It is not only to have the big dynamical models to be used by the scientists and artificial intelligence, but to combine everything together and to bring all this powerful but very nice information in the better language and more understandable way at the different levels, the decision makers, the society, and even the school kids.
So let's explore a little bit more about the digital twin of the ocean, known as the DTO to its friends and family. Since 2021, the EU has been investing 10 million euros a year into the core of the project, which is destined to be a public service and a public good, a bit like the satellite data from Copernicus or Galileo. It's a digital copy of our ocean, meaning that in theory, everything that we know about the ocean is integrated together and made available online for everyone to play around with. It's going to be a bit like the holodeck from Star Trek.
Hello! This woodland pattern is quite popular, sir. Perhaps because it duplicates Earth so well. Coming here almost makes me feel human myself.
I didn't believe these simulations could be this real.
In Star Trek, the holodeck is a fictional technology that the characters use for recreation, training, or research purposes. The DTO isn't as sophisticated, but at least it actually does exist, and it's already very powerful.
This is really a fantastic tool. we can showcase the different scenarios related to the climate change in order to mitigate problems, in order to understand the impacts, but most importantly, to find the different solutions in respect of the climate change.
This technology can indeed help us to find solutions. But Joanna Staniver warns there's one thing it can't replace.
It cannot substitute the policymaker and decision makers to make their own decisions.
One of the biggest challenges building this digital twin is a lack of data. If you've listened to the previous episodes of Ocean Calls, you probably already know that the deep sea is less well explored than the surface of Mars.
The digital twin acknowledges well that our understanding of the ocean is never perfect. We consider different factors here as limitation of the data, but also the changing of the water patterns and human influence. This is all about presenting this information in a more transparent way, making the users, making the society aware of the confidence level of our scenarios and our predictions.
All right, let's talk about some of the use cases for this digital twin of the ocean.
At Mercator Océan, we develop ocean systems that reconstruct the state of the ocean, the currents, the temperature, the salinity at the surface, but also across the full depth of the ocean in three dimensions.
That's Simon van Gennep, an oceanographer for Mercator Ocean International, who the EU has entrusted to develop the core infrastructure for the DTO together with the Flanders Marine Institute. Simon studies the role of ocean circulation in the marine ecosystem, and he believes he can use AI to pair up information about where plastic pollution comes from with large ocean circulation models to predict where a given piece of plastic may be in the future.
On the digital twin of the ocean, I've got access to the surface currents through a global model. And I also know that there are data sets available that tell me how much plastic is entering in the ocean through the coasts or through the rivers. So if people want to protect a place, they can figure out how much plastic is contaminating an area and where it comes from.
So how does that work?
I look at how the currents transport material and where this material then goes. For every week of the year, I deploy virtual particles in this ocean model. And then the virtual currents that we represent are going to transport this plastic around.
In the future, people could even go back in time and check where plastic is coming from.
If we know where this plastic most potentially comes from, we can actually work together in trying to target our action plan for mitigating this plastic.
This information could be invaluable to local activists and governments, but also, for example, to businesses who want to become more sustainable.
We've been talking to people that work with turtles or regional conventions that want to figure out how much plastic is contaminating the region they want to protect and what would be the best scenario in order to mitigate this pressure.
But obviously, artificial intelligence can't create a perfect twin of the ocean. Simon describes the limitations of the tech as the uncertainties of the solution.
The problem with plastic transport is that there are small errors when we reproduce the currents every day. So if we move our plastic from at one place and we move it to the next place the next day and so on, we sort of accumulate a little bit of errors. So after a long period of time, let's say after 2 years, we cannot guarantee that a plastic that left one place is actually where we diagnosed it to be.
However, there's a solution to these uncertainties of the solution. More data, more use cases, and more collaboration.
If we only use one model, we only have one solution. The idea is that if we can use multiple models, we're going to have a cloud of solutions so we can associate and what we call uncertainties.
Right now, all this valuable data is available at universities, research centres, governments. It's collected in all shapes and forms. And thanks to the EU's digital twin of the ocean, it should be fused together.
This is knowledge that should not just remain in the hands of scientists. This is knowledge that needs to be used to develop activities in the ocean and create a situation where people are confident in the decisions they take because they have been scientifically backed.
After all, scientists often say their work on projects like the AI-powered digital twin of the ocean is all about serving the public interest. And the interests of teenage turtles.
All right!
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles!
Okay, I'm Philippe Gaspar.
Philippe also works at Mercator Ocean.
The question in which I'm most interested is to understand how the ocean circulation influences the migrations of marine animals, and particularly sea turtles. Baby turtles, they're born on the beach and then they get into the water, then they disappear to observation. I mean, they're no longer seen for many years until they come back to the beach to reproduce again.
Scientists call this period in a turtle's life the lost years, and it can last up to 30 years for some species. The problem is, we don't really know what they're doing. We suspect that, like all teenagers and 20-somethings, they're having a few adventures.
Little turtles born in Japan will migrate to Baja California. Other turtles born in Florida will come to the Azores and then the coast of Europe and the Canary Islands and go back to Florida.
Just as an example, the leatherback turtle can travel 16,000 kilometres each year, crossing the entire Pacific Ocean.
Our main subject of interest is to understand where are they going after a birth. The first theory was that actually little turtles did not swim, so their dispersal was only due to ocean currents.
But Philippe's team had a hard time imagining that in 30 years the little turtles would just be cruising around on the currents.
Sea turtles cannot live in very, very cold waters. So we assumed that those juveniles, they were swimming in direction that would keep them in waters with adequate temperatures. And we also assumed that they were swimming to find food.
But it was a theory hard to prove. You can't put a tracker on a tiny turtle. But that's where the Digital Twin of the Ocean project comes in handy.
We are simulating with a computer the dispersal of little turtles from their nesting beaches under the influence of simulated currents. And doing those simulations, we realized that these little turtles actually had to perform every year seasonal migrations.
So, what are the teenage turtles up to?
During winter, they would swim towards equatorial regions to get warmer. And during summer or spring and summer, they would swim towards the pole as there is more food at higher latitudes.
From habitat destruction to entanglement in fishing gear, sea turtles face numerous threats. According to UNESCO, about 1 million sea animals, including turtles, die each year due to plastic pollution alone.
There are only 7 sea turtle species in the ocean for the moment, and all of them are endangered.
But Philippe's ocean model can actually help sea turtle conservation.
The encounters with plastic, we cannot do anything about it except diagnose where it might happen. But for encounter with fisheries, we can actually predict where turtles are going and provide this information to fishermen. And with this information, fishermen could adapt their fishing trips to avoid areas with a high probability of catching turtles.
Now to an entirely different application for AI and the digital twin.
Meteor tsunamis are well known in the Mediterranean.
This is Joaquin Tintori. He works at SOCIB, a research center in Spain.
We focus our interest in the Balearic Islands and more specifically in the harbor of Ciutadella, which is an elongated harbor of the western coast of Menorca, which is one of the Balearic Islands.
Meteo tsunamis occur here every summer around June and July. Unlike seismic tsunamis, they're caused by atmospheric disturbances.
What we have is intense sea-level oscillations in the harbour with a very short period, a period of 10 minutes. The sea level in the harbour goes down for like 2 or 3 meters, and then the harbour almost completely empties in its inner part.
And then, after the water is gone, it comes back.
When the water comes back, then it really looks like a tsunami.
In a matter of minutes, these meteo tsunamis can destroy port infrastructure and harm the boats. Joaquin's team is working with the digital twin of the ocean to try and find a way to forecast meteo tsunamis.
We need to be sure about the reliability of the forecasting. So we have to be able to observe, transfer the data, simulate, come back with the corrections to the observations, and then provide the feedback to the end users. And this is a major challenge nowadays, technologically and scientifically.
SOCIB has been working on different models to help different stakeholders use the scientific data for over a decade. But Joaquin points out that his community is still very new to this type of artificial intelligence tool.
In the environment area, the digital twin is still really a challenge, because what is very different from other digital twins is that in the ocean is continuously changing at all time scales.
The Digital Twin of the Ocean is a pan-European project dedicated specifically to our seas, but it's not the only effort of its kind. There are other similar efforts to apply AI technologies to modelling the Earth, or even something like the human brain, for example. And Europe isn't the only region working on digital twins.
What we're doing in the Red Sea Decade Expedition is bold. It has not been done before.
To me, it's the same as space exploration, but it's right at your doorstep.
Ocean X is an ambitious philanthropic project to popularize science and create interest around ocean topics. Alongside recording awesome images and boosting ocean education, Ocean X is also pioneering data collection and analysis. Let's listen to their top scientist and co-CEO, Vincent Pierribone.
The ocean is this very complex system. It's the definition of a complex system. It's just too much of a multidimensional space to be able to get your head around that. Underwater is just as complicated and needs the type of tools that I think AI can provide.
And of course, a good AI needs tons of data.
Above land, we have arrays of sensors all over the countries. We have wave heights, we have tidal changes, everything is all incredibly, very data rich. But underwater, the underwater environment is just inherently terrible for modern data collection, because first of all, it's opaque to light mostly. So by the time you get to 100, 200 meters, the light doesn't reach there. So you can't look down from a remote sensor, whether it be a satellite or it be a drone or anything.
Which means you need to physically go there, which any researcher will tell you is very expensive and dangerous.
There's terrible things that happen at depth. Very few pieces of equipment, very few materials can withstand the pressures of the deep. But we can't just accept. We've been working on sensors that are cheap, that can go deep. We're even working on scavenging energy from the deep, using that energy to power things.
Another technique OceanX is using is rapid DNA sequencing. Using lightweight kit that can be operated on board their ship, they can scan a water sample from a particular depth at a particular time and tell you every single species that recently swam through that part of the ocean. It creates a snapshot in time and space that would have been immensely difficult to achieve only a few years ago. Once more data is collected and standardized and put into an AI, Vincent believes that miracles could happen.
In my own work in neuroscience, I've seen AIs do things that just leave me breathless. AIs that are trained on bespoke sets of data, certain sets of data to answer certain specific questions, and in my mind are nothing short of miraculous in what they're able to tell us as scientists. I think the digital twin is a great idea. What would be wonderful if countries would get together and decide on a harmonized format.
There's even nothing much stopping the digital twin of the ocean and similar technologies from changing the world.
I'm a very futurist thinker about things, and I try to imagine a world where politics and everything else doesn't come into play. And humans decided that certain things were bad for the world based on information that we had. That's how we make laws and rules. I experienced so many problems in the ocean, so many things I would like to see changed. Hopefully, if we had strong information saying that you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, maybe you can get away with this, maybe you can get away with that, but these are no-nos, maybe human behavior could be changed. Because this is such an unbelievable resource. The Earth, we cannot leave this place. There's just nowhere to go.
It's a beautiful vision of a wonderful world, and perhaps the European digital twin of the ocean is a step towards making it happen. And now to the part of the episode in which a well-known person tells us about their most interesting marine experience. And this time you'll hear from British actor Chris Jenks. You might know him from shows like Sex Education and Karen Piri. This time, he's sharing a tale of growing up on the Isle of Arran in Scotland.
Hi, my name's Chris Jenks. I am an actor and more recently a director and a producer. I grew up on an island in Scotland called the Isle of Arran. The beach down from us, Slithery Beach, was kind of where we took our dog on a lot of walks and spent a lot of time down there. Very rocky beach, very stormy. So our dog, Brandy, who's a Labrador, would dive in headfirst after big, I want to call them sticks, but he'd usually go for big kind of logs. And he would kind of broach the waves and go and get them, which was very entertaining to watch. At the time, I found it really fascinating looking for sort of animal bones on the beach. So I had a big collection of kind of like cow skulls and bird kind of skulls and even some kind of whale spine bits. I kind of loved the fantasy world. Like, I was into a lot of fantasy novels and things when I was younger, so I sort of thought that if I brought them back up to the house, I could use them for like spells or witchcraft or like like I had this little room that was up in a barn that I used to call my laboratory, and I would keep them all up there, and I'd had different things to make potions and stuff like that. So it was part of a kind of more broad interest in nature and fantasy, I guess. Our house looked over it was about a 10-minute walk from the beach, but it overlooked the beach. So looking out my bedroom window as a kid, it was definitely a kind of dominated my imagination and the horizon. The feeling as well of cold and wind and salt were all very refreshing and calming to me as a kid. But also very magical. I remember looking out my window at nighttime and seeing the lighthouses blinking on the mainland and seeing the kind of orange glow of all the lights from the other side. So that was very magical and very kind of, I guess in some ways synonymous with what my future was going to be like and what I was going to do when I left. And so it's quite exciting, but also a bit of a restrictive presence as well. I think when I go to the shore now, in some ways it's quite a nostalgic feeling. It was nice, it was comforting, but it was also a bit lonely because you're just on the beach by yourself or whatever. So I think the ruggedness and the stones and the rubbish and will always have a place in my heart. Not to say that I don't enjoy lounging around on white sand. I do, yeah. I've always had quite a magpie kind of nature, so I like finding little trinkets and stuff to take home, or imagining that something could be used in a different way, or wondering where it's washed from. Like sometimes you'd find stuff that said Canada on it or whatever, and you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this has come from the other side of the world. So in that way, I find it very interesting. I suppose it's quite worrying that so much stuff does wash up on the beach, but that's not my initial thing when I'd see it. It's more just sort of interest. The message that I would like to send to your listeners about sea would be, go down, enjoy it. Don't be put off by the rugged rocks and the wind and the cold. It's very refreshing to enjoy that as well. And yeah, go down, dig a hole, have a swim.
Well, my thanks to Chris Jenks for that inspiring ocean tale. I can totally imagine being there with him.
Ocean Calls.
You've been listening to Ocean Calls, a bi-monthly podcast for Friends of the Sea, in which we explore everything from fisheries to offshore wind farms and share our passion for fascinating ocean facts. If you like this episode and you want to learn more, go to the Euronews YouTube channel to watch a longer version of this conversation. To find out more about our guests and their work, check the links in the description. I'm your host, Jeremy Wilkes, and this show is produced by Naira Davlashian and Natalia Olsner. The sound editing is by Jean-Christophe Marcot, and sound mixing is by Mathieu Duchesne. Our editor-in-chief is Sophie Claudet. Ocean Calls is produced in partnership with the European Commission's Directorate General for Maritime Affairs and Fisheries.